Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Monday, January 12th. The use of a local government database is reigniting concern among privacy advocates. More on that next, but first, the headlines. Using a patient's DNA to customize drug treatments could improve outcomes for those battling cancer. That's according to a new study led by the UC San Diego School of Medicine. The study found success in tailoring drug treatments to each patient based on their tumor's distinctive DNA and individual mutations. An associate professor of medicine at UCSD says the research shows what's possible when a patient's biology guides their treatment. A co-leader of the UCSD Moores Cancer Center added that instead of a one-size-fits-all, they are moving towards a one-size-fits-one model. Teachers in the San Diego Unified School District are planning a one-day strike over an alleged lack of special education staffing. The district says schools will close next month for one day for the strike. The teachers' union is accusing the district of ignoring limits on special education caseloads. The district says 97% of its special education teacher positions are filled and that there's a nationwide shortage of those specialized instructors. Students will make up the missed day of class on March 9th. A community barbecue helped feed low-income families over the weekend, made possible due to a $250,000 donation from the San Diego Unity Fund grant. The Neighborhood House Association gave out meal kits to dozens of families involved in the Head Start program. The association says the kits featured shelf-stable items like PB&J, pasta, and oatmeal. Head Start is a federally funded child development program looking to break cycles of poverty by providing preschool children of low-income families with social, emotional, nutritional, and psychological support. They believe it takes the entire family as well as the community to guide and nurture children. This past weekend was just the initial kickoff. There are future goals to make it a weekly event. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Figuring out the right sport for your kid can feel overwhelming. I'm taking that journey with my son, Dorian, exploring different sports and revisiting the fields that I grew up playing. Together, we're searching for the right fit and maybe reconnecting with a few old memories along the way. It's Game Time Decision, a new series from KPBS. Join us at kpbs.org/gametime.
A little-known database controlled by the San Diego Association of Governments has long concerned local privacy advocates. Now, as we enter the second year of President Trump's deportation campaign, reporter Gustavo Solis says advocates are more worried than ever about how federal immigration agents use that data.
For an annual fee of about $200,000, SANDAG allows Homeland Security investigations and Customs and Border Protection access to a database known as ArGIS. Every law enforcement agency in San Diego County feeds information into ArGIS. It includes traffic citations, arrest records, field interviews, and even a local jail census.
Personal details like their driver license data might be stored in ArGIS. Criminal backgrounds or criminal records might be stored in ArGIS.
Seth Hall is a privacy advocate with the Trust SD Coalition. Local police agencies have shared data through ArGIS for decades. But now, President Trump's aggressive immigration enforcement tactics are raising new concerns about sharing local data with the federal government.
It is not always great to share data because sometimes you don't know who you're sharing it with, and you don't know what the motivations of those people might be.
Most concerning is the lack of protections in place to ensure that Border Patrol agents are not using ArGIS for immigration enforcement.
We are at a time where the Trump administration is attacking all immigrants, people with status, without status, with no criminal record.
Humaira Yousufi is a senior policy strategist at the Partnership for the Advancement of New Americans, or PANA.
They are, CBP, HSI are literally just out there to find as many individuals to detain and deport as possible.
Last year, Border Patrol agents gained backdoor access to license plate reader databases across the country, including in El Cajon. And in Chicago, a federal judge wrote that Border Patrol leadership was, quote, outright lying when she wrote an injunction limiting the agency's use of force. Yousufi argues that those incidents show that CBP is not a trustworthy law enforcement partner.
And in the midst of that, these types of systems that share data indiscriminately is putting our immigrant communities in harm's way.
In a statement, a CBP spokesperson said agents use ArcGIS in the vast majority of their criminal cases, but would not say whether they use it for immigration enforcement, which they are not allowed to do. SANDAG has several restrictions in place aimed at preventing federal agents from using the database for immigration enforcement, but it's unclear whether they are following those rules. SANDAG officials told KPBS that the ArcGIS user agreement prevents them from auditing the system. Instead, audits only happen when they are requested by a member agency or by the California Department of Justice. The last audit of CBP usage was in 2017, and SANDAG officials say CBP will not allow them to share a copy of that audit with KPBS. Yousufi says that the lack of oversight from SANDAG and minimal interest from local politicians may be putting San Diego's immigrant population at risk of deportation.
You know, it's time for us to get our heads out of the sand and recognize the reality of the threats that are facing all of our communities right now. And we have to reconsider sharing this information, selling this data with agencies that we know will harm San Diegans.
The SANDAG board is made up of elected officials from each of San Diego's 18 cities and the county. None of the board members agreed to an interview with KPBS as of the deadline for this story. Erin Surumoto-Grassi is with Alliance San Diego. She has a lot of questions for San Diego's political leaders.
What accountability measures are you going to put in place, right? Can you get those audits? Can you require the auditing to happen? How else can you make it transparent and accountable? What other oversight can you implement in this?
She also argues that ArcGIS's data sharing practices undermine local sanctuary laws.
Our local law enforcement agencies are able to say, yeah, we don't directly share this, but if you are sharing it through your ArcGIS database and then ArcGIS is selling that information, you may not be directly sharing it, but that information is still being shared, and that's something we should be concerned with.
One of the SANDAG board members is San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria. Gloria's office sent KPBS a statement touting his commitment to strengthening local protections for immigrant families, and it referenced an executive order that the mayor signed in July reaffirming that city resources will not be used for immigration enforcement. But when asked whether the mayor thought that ArcGIS was undermining that executive order, his office did not respond. Gustavo Solis, KPBS News.
The San Diego City Council returns for its first session of the new year today. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says water and sewage rates are looming large.
The council will hear a report on the financial outlook of the city's water and wastewater utility funds. The council approved 2 years of water rate increases last October. They're necessary to fund federally mandated water infrastructure and to keep up with the rising cost of water, which is linked in part to climate change and drought. The report makes clear 2 years of rate hikes will not be enough to fund the city's water needs. Barring a major change in costs and revenues, the city will need to raise water and sewer rates each year through 2031. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
A federal judge on Friday blocked the Trump administration from freezing billions of dollars in child care funding for five Democratic-led states. Reporter Andrew Dyer says that includes about $5 billion for California.
California joins New York, Colorado, Illinois, and Minnesota in the lawsuit. California Attorney General Rob Bonta says the president doesn't have the authority to withhold funds appropriated by Congress.
It's unconscionable, it's undemocratic, and yes, it's unlawful, which is why we've taken Trump and his administration to court.
In identical letters sent to the five states this month, the administration said it was concerned about the potential for fraud across the assistance programs.
Just a allegation of fraud without any evidence, without any facts, without any data, without backing for such an allegation.
The Department of Health and Human Services oversees the grant programs. It didn't respond to a request for comment. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
San Diego County public health officials are pushing back against new federal child care vaccine guidelines. Health reporter Heidi DeMarco says they are urging parents to instead follow guidance from the American Academy of Pediatrics.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reduced the number of vaccines routinely recommended for all children. The changes were made without the usual input from pediatric and vaccine advisory groups.
American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend any changes in the vaccine schedule.
Dr. John Bradley is a pediatric infectious disease specialist at Rady Children's Hospital. He says the science behind childhood vaccines hasn't changed. That includes six vaccines the CDC is no longer recommending.
We believe that the vaccines for RSV, hepatitis A and B, rotavirus, flu, and meningococcus should continue to be given.
San Diego County health officials say childhood and adolescent vaccines are covered by insurance. They are also available through the county clinics for families without coverage. Heidi DeMarco, KPBS News.
The 90-year-old Sunshine Brooks Theater in Oceanside is in the midst of a $2.2 million renovation. North County reporter Alexander Wen got a look inside.
Right now, the lobby and the studio at the historic Brooks Theater are a mess. Walls torn down, carpet pulled up, and dust and loose wires everywhere. But once construction is completed, producing artistic director Kevin Blacksboro says it'll improve patrons' experience.
The lobby is getting redone. We're getting our studio wall blown out so we can have direct access from the lobby to the studio. It makes it easier for VIP events or for our youth program where the kids can be in the studio and come directly to the theater. But the big thing that we're all excited about is our six new bathrooms. We have two right now, and those intermissions, whoo boy, those are very long.
This is the first phase of the project. It is expected to be completed by the end of March and cost $885,000. Phase two will begin as soon as funding is secured. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
All right, SDNN listeners, today is yet another episode of Pod Behind the Package. Once per week, I bring in a reporter, anchor, or a video journalist for a behind-the-scenes deep dive and informal chat. Joining me this week is our military and veterans reporter, Andrew Dyer. I invite you to visit his story on our KPBS website under the headline, How Trump's Warrior Dividend Checks Impact Troops in Higher Cost of Living Areas. Dyer, how you doing?
Great. It's great to be back in the SDNN fold.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels weird to welcome you to SDNN. I mean, you've been hosting and producing before I even joined the company, but welcome.
No, it's great to be here. I really like that you're doing these little segments with reporters. It's really cool.
Before we jump into your conversation about your latest package and piece, you yourself were enlisted in the Navy for over 10 years, and you worked on two aircraft carriers. I'm told you were gifted at fixing and working on these aircraft carriers. Is it something you enjoyed and found passion in, or was it just your assignment? Was it just your job?
Well, it was kind of both things. You know, it was interesting to learn how to work on like radar, and I went to electro-optic school and learned how to work on the AT FLIR pods, which is the advanced targeting forward-looking infrared that basically laser guides bombs on the targets. But I was pretty good when it was simple. I was good working on the automatic carrier landing system and some of the radio stuff in the COMNAV shop, but once I got in the cast shop and started needing to work on those EOSUs, luckily by the time I was there, I was a supervisor, so I did not have to do a whole lot of wrench turning on those things, and I'm glad because they're difficult to work on. So the technical expertise was there, but it was very limited to the more to like the last generation of like avionic equipment.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I always come to you, obviously, to fact check anything dealing with military veterans. I am the definition of a civilian. But obviously, Andrew Dyer, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. Regarding your transition to civilian life and therefore into journalism, it involves a local favorite of craft beer, I believe. Can you talk to me about how craft beer plays a role in you becoming a journalist?
Sure. Well, I was in community college after leaving the service, and I was like in a creative writing class, and I was just interested in writing. And San Diego City Beat, the former Alt Weekly, needed a beer writer. I was in this Facebook group with the San Diego Beer Facebook group, and the guy who was the beer writer posted in there that they needed somebody, and I just emailed the editor and sent a writing sample, and that was it. I started writing about the beer industry.
Awesome. Hopefully the audience gets to know you a little bit better after that. Transitioning now to your package. You started off with a really strong quote from Janessa Goldbeck, CEO of the Vet Voice Foundation.
The concern is not the idea of supporting troops with more money, but it's how the proposal was funded and what it actually displaces.
Can you talk to me a little bit about what we learned in your piece about what the payment displaces?
Sure. So it's really interesting because, you know, this big, huge omnibus spending bill that was passed in the summer included almost $3 billion. And it was just like one sentence in the appropriations thing that said something along the lines of $2.9 billion to subsidize basic allowance for housing. It was really kind of vague and open to interpretation, but it did include that key term, basic allowance for housing, which is kind of what I keyed in on. Because when it was announced, President Trump said that it was being paid for by tariff revenue, which I think Defense One was the first outlet to report, like, no, that isn't true. It was coming from, you know, it was approved by Congress. This was money that was already going to the Pentagon. And the president just kind of steered it toward this one-time payment, which he's got a history of doing things like this.
And talk to me a little bit about some of the, I don't know if we could call it irony, but I guess, but the inconsistency as far as, like you said, in higher areas like San Diego, you would be getting close to somewhere between three and 4,000. But if you were in, I believe the Oklahoma City was the example in your piece, you get thousands less. So can you talk to me about that difference?
What jumped out at me was that BAH is tied to both your rank, whether you have dependents, and, you know, where you live. If you're stationed in San Diego, you get 4,000 a month as an E5. Higher ranks get more. But if you're stationed somewhere like Oklahoma, I use that just because that's what Janessa Goldbeck, who I interviewed for the story, that's kind of the example she pulled out. You know, it's less than $1,700 a month. So that's less than half, right? But if you take money that is for BAH and you just give everybody an equal amount, that's not how BAH works. And, you know, you're also giving it to everybody, including troops that do not receive BAH, people that live in barracks or that live in base housing. So I was really kind of like going back to like when I was in uniform, like thinking like, what would I think about this? So I wanted to talk with somebody about this kind of angle on the story.
The somebody that Dyer spoke with was Janessa Goldbeck, CEO of Vet Voice Foundation. We'll toss to that clip now.
It does take away from money that was congressionally allocated to do other things. And Congress funds military pay and readiness deliberately. So when the president rebrands existing money into a political payout, it undermines that planning. And it actually sets a dangerous precedent that no matter who's in office, you know, that money could be taken from a planned thing and reallocated for a political purposes. If we want better pay, we should make it permanent and transparent and not as a short-term gimmick.
That was Janessa Goldbeck, CEO of the Vet Voice Foundation. And once again, that was reporter Andrew Dyer with us on SDNN's Pod Behind the Package. That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. Have a great day.